Right now, we want to get some analysis on what is happening in Ukraine and what is happening in the markets. We bring in Christopher Vecchio, DailyFX.com senior strategist, as well as Elizabeth Brock, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Elizabeth, I want to start with you. One of your focuses is deterrence. And this action, even though it has been telegraphed, did seem to catch the international community off guard in terms of sort of the suddenness and then it actually, that Putin actually took the action. Is there still a possibility of deterrence? What happens next in this situation?
It's extremely difficult. So the international community, for the most part, was assuming that Putin was just trying to frighten the West, trying to frighten Ukraine, but he wouldn't invade the country. We were wrong. He has clearly invaded the country, and not just with some peacekeepers in the self-declared republics, but the rest of Ukraine is now under attack as well. So what can we do now? I think what we have to focus on is cutting or threatening to cut the remaining links we have with Russia. That includes, for example, not exporting some of the goods that the Russian establishment, the Russian elite, likes to take advantage of, for example, luxury goods. I noticed Belgium is resisting an embargo on diamonds. I think we should certainly stop exporting diamonds, but we should also stop suspend the opportunities for Russian athletes, Russian sports teams, Russian artists to be part of the international community. They are Russia's best ambassadors, and they represent the countries. And it's not their fault that Russia is invaded, but it's one of the tools at our disposal. We could also highlight a little bit more what the Wagner Group is doing. They are, it's up to no good, and it does operate with the cooperation of the Russian government.
Chris, the Russian ruble really fell off the map here this morning. Do you see any bottom in sight here for the Russian currency, and what does that plunge mean to the Russian economy?
I don't think it means anything for the Russian economy. This is a country with less than 18% debt to GDP ratio. Over 80% of its local debt is denominated in rubles. And higher energy prices over the past year have filled Russia's coffers. Putin doesn't really care if the ruble weakens from this point forward because the economy is so insular. You have to go back to 2018 when Russia unloaded all of their U.S. sovereign debt. They hold a paltry amount of U.S. treasuries right now, almost thinking in advance. And that's one of the benefits, if you will, of Russia's system compared to our U.S. system. Our politicians here, they think one quarter, 1 year ahead, the next election cycle ahead. This has been a long time coming. This has been coming since 2014. This has been coming since 2018. The clues have been there. Putin has been making these moves in advance. The economy can withstand this to a large degree, even if Russia is cut off from the rest of the world, thanks to how the economy has been structured over the past half decade.
Chris, where we see the weakness in the Russian ruble, Jared just mentioned a pop in the U.S. dollar. Do you think that move is justified, given that we have seen this really significant move higher in crude oil that could really damage the U.S. economy?
I do. When we talk about the U.S. dollar, the largest component of any dollar basket is the euro. Typical dollar index is 57.6% weighting there. And so the euro is ground zero for this in the developed world. Right now, when you take a look at the difference between Fed and ECB policy, that seems like a paltry comparison, but it drives that wedge deeper, whereby the Fed is going to be hiking rates faster, and the ECB will very much be constrained to keeping policy accommodative moving forward, given the conditions that we're seeing play out on the ground. We're really walking on a knife's edge here, where if a Polish soldier is killed, an Estonian or Latvian soldier is killed as a result of this, Article 5 from NATO could be triggered, and we could see this largest ground war in Europe since World War II expand and escalate very dramatically. So there's good reason why the euro is suffering here today. It's not just simply due to Fed ECB policy differentials, but the prospect of this becoming a much larger, more significant economic drag moving forward.
Elizabeth, I want to bring you back into this because from what Chris is saying, and certainly he's not the only one to say this, that sanctions, as well perhaps even as export controls, might not be enough here in this situation. You could still see more escalation. You still could see more on-the-ground military conflict with the U.S. involved in some capacity, with European nations involved in some capacity. What is the likelihood that this will balloon out of control in a scenario like what Chris is describing?
Chris made an excellent point that this could turn into a European war if a citizen of a NATO member state is killed. But even short of that, it's a very risky situation, very dangerous situation wherein the global community clearly wants to help Ukraine, and there are the different countries are sending weapons to Ukraine. There is a question about how quickly the Ukrainian armed forces can absorb this weaponry and learn to use it. And that raises the question, maybe we should send trainers, officers, soldiers who can train these Ukrainians in how to use the equipment. And that then raises the specter of a Vietnam-like scenario, which, as we think all recall, started with the U.S. sending officers to train and advise and assist the Vietnamese, the South Vietnamese forces. So that's where we are. And I think that's also why the US and other countries are so reluctant to commit any soldiers at this point, even though it seems like it would be the very most obvious thing they should do, because Ukraine is smaller than Russia. It needs help, but it would be extremely risky.
Well, and that raises the question as well. We've been talking about from an economic perspective how resistant Russia is. From a military perspective, I mean, you're talking about a pretty unified front from the West, from the European Union, from the United States. Militarily, does Russia have the strength to withstand if there was a more, I don't know, coordinated effort?
Certainly, if the U.S. were to get involved, Russia would struggle to withstand that military pressure. But even short of that, the Ukrainians are a whole lot better. The Ukrainian armed forces are a whole lot better equipped, better trained than they were in 2014. And I think this is where Putin's miscalculation lies. He knows they are better trained and equipped than they were in 2014. I don't think he really calculated that Ukraine would be as united as it is, and that the West would be as united as it is. So what we're likely to see is the Ukrainian armed forces and indeed ordinary Ukrainians putting up a determined fight. We should remember the president of Ukraine has invited Ukrainians, ordinary Ukrainians, to get weapons if they feel they can make a difference using those weapons. So Russia faces a very strong resistance on the Ukrainian side, which could bog the Russian armed forces down there for much longer than Putin, I think, had calculated. He seems to have calculated that this would be a swift intervention. Russia would declare victory and Ukraine would be weakened forever. Not so.
Chris, a lot of folks this morning have told me what we're seeing here in the pre-market. This is a market panic. But in the same breath, they say that investors should start to step in here and nibble at some weakness. Is that the right play?
It's possible. I mean, I want to look for some indicators. Typically, during other market sell-off episodes, two things have popped out that suggest we're nearing an exhaustion point. That would be VIX above 35 and VVIX, the volatility of volatility index, moving above 150. We didn't see that yesterday. It's likely that we're going to see that here today. Both the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are coming into some technically significant levels, really going back to the May 2021 lows. And I do think at that point in time, given the specter of this sell-off, it becomes sensible from a risk-reward standpoint to at least try to cherry-pick a short-term bottom. This all ties back to what's happening with the Fed in March, right? Russia is an accelerant here, but the conditions are in place for weaker stocks. You have declining corporate earnings, a weaker growth environment, and of course, record high inflation. That's going to bring an onset of several Fed rate hikes in back-to-back-to-back meetings now. But the Fed is not likely to go forward with 50 basis points here, regardless of what the upcoming CPI print is right before their meeting in March. And ultimately, given the scale of the decline we've seen thus far, looking into those May 2021 lows as a stopping point for further bleeding, if you will, that to me makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, at the same time, it doesn't seem like anything's going to deter the Fed from at least a 25 basis point increase. Chris, thank you so much. Chris Vecchio of DailyFX.com and Elizabeth Braw, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks to you both very much this morning.